Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Thursday, September 7th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Glad to have you with us, as always. On today's show, David Lindrum will give us our weekly UAS update. We'll find out about the elaborate entrance of Chad Deity, the new production at Perseverance Theater. We'll hear a story by our very own Trip Krause about a Chilkat robe's return to Alaska. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more, right here, live and local, on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Hannah Colton, in for Antonia Gonzalez. A group of First Nations in Manitoba have declared a state of emergency. They say it's over a drug crisis on their reserves, and it's sparking an increase in crime. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
The drug crisis in many major North American cities is also affecting First Nations. The chiefs who declared the emergency are from the Dakota Ojibwe Tribal Council, made up of seven First Nations. They say in addition to the higher crime rates, there are health issues and more suicides. Suicides have already resulted in individual First Nations communities in Manitoba and Ontario declaring their own states of emergency. Drugs have plagued First Nations for years, and the Dakota Ojibwe Council says it's now even worse. Ken Chalmers speaks for the council. He says now the drug crisis is affecting children and even babies.
In the last year in my community, 60% of our children born were put on morphine after birth because of the addictions of the mothers.
The chiefs agreed to work on a strategy to tackle the crisis. They say they will focus on education, prevention, and enforcement. But they also say they can't do it alone and need help from the federal and provincial governments to build an addiction treatment facility. The chiefs say they will also cooperate with local law enforcement agencies to prevent drugs from entering their reserves. Any band members who are caught selling drugs will be expelled from the community. Members of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police attended the chiefs' meeting and assured them there would be protection for people who come forward with information about illegal drugs. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Fry bread will no longer play a part in the annual Miss Navajo Nation pageant. The change marks a shift toward traditional foods and away from the staple that was born out of government rations during the Navajo people's forced relocation in the 1860s. In the past, contestants have been judged for the texture and taste of fry bread as well as their fire-building and cooking techniques. The largest donation in the history of a Minnesota medical school will be used to establish a Native American Center of Excellence. The University of Minnesota at Duluth received a $10 million gift from an anonymous donor who recently learned about his own Native American roots. Melissa Walls is an associate professor who studies mental and behavioral health at the Duluth campus. She is Bois Fort and Kuchiching First Nation Ojibwe, and she hopes the money will bolster the program's longstanding emphasis on recruiting Native students and fellows.
If we could figure out a way to at least partially or fully fund some of those positions for Native people, I think that would be awesome.
As a researcher, Walls says she's dreaming up projects about diabetes prevention and the healing effects of sweat lodges. But more than any specific project, she'd like to see the $10 million help build the medical school's capacity to do collaborative research with tribal communities.
Maybe this is an opportunity for us to pinpoint some of the needs of our local tribes and then use some of the awesome resources within our building to build partnerships to address issues that matter.
The dean of the Duluth campus, Dr. Paula Termulin, told the St. Paul Pioneer Press that just 1% of the nation's doctors are Native American. Two tribes recently got the go-ahead to bypass the Bureau of Indian Affairs' approval of land lease deals for businesses. Law360.com reports the BIA this summer approved both the Osage Nation and the Stillaguamish tribes to enter into leases without the Bureau's approval, as provided by a 2012 statute. Known as the Hearth Act, the statute allows tribes to avoid the sometimes burdensome process of getting BIA approval for land lease deals that involve tribal property. With National Native News, I'm Hannah Colton.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by BNSF Railway, proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd, helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations.
Yacht A, support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitor planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Thursday, September 7th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host today. It's currently 55 degrees with showers here in the capital city. Joining me on the show now is David Lendrum. He's the landscape superintendent out at UAS. David, you were telling me you've been out there for close to, what, 16 years?
There you go.
Wow.
16 years.
I bet you know that campus real well.
As a matter of fact, I do. And mostly what I know is what's growing where. But, you know, I've been almost everywhere there.
Where's one of your favorite places to hang out on that campus?
You know, right in front of the library building. There's some big planted areas that are designed to be attractive in the whole time students are around, whether it's summer school or during the entire rest of the year. With large boulders set into the ground and something always blooming there, and the large boulders are situated so they're just the right height to lounge on.
And is that where the raven is?
That's exactly right.
And a totem pole as well, right?
The totem, that's
beautiful.
Right. And nice views of the lake from there.
Yeah.
And that brings to mind the next big project that the university is doing is to organize a better access route down along the waterfront. Because if you ever notice that the buildings are all facing away from the water, and the main campus corridor is away from the water. It's as if you can look at it, but you can't quite get there. And there's not a great deal of access. So the next scheme, you know, they're nowhere near doing it now. It's all still on paper, is to be able to continue the pathway around the lake up right along the lake edge, through the edge of the campus, and then have access spines, universal access spines, so that anybody can get there down to the water. So, 'cause it's hard to get there other than through the pretty busy boat launch area.
Yeah,
you know,
that
if you want to get to the lake
idea.
Easily, the university is a good place to do that.
Sure. And David's here today. You know, we usually check in with UAS about once a week, and today we're going to sort of focus on the physical side of stuff, as you can tell.
And the facilities department that I work for is charged with managing all that stuff. There's a lot of space at the university. You know, you drive by it, or even if you park and you walk and you go to your class and you come out again, you don't really think about how much there really is there.
You were saying something like 10 acres?
10 acres of interior space.
And how many different sort of satellite areas do you have to take care of as well?
Well, there's the downtown technical education at the harbor. There's the Anderson Building, which is really part of the school in Fairbanks, but we take care of that also. There's the student housing section and the associated recreation center that's built in partnership with the National Guard.
And about how many of you are there in this department?
About 40 of us.
Wow.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And you know, anytime the school's open, there's people there working. You know, there are people working there most of the night. Most of the custodial work goes on in the nighttime, so the night shift takes care of things when there aren't people there. But there's a full-time electrician. There's a full-time plumber. There's a full-time boiler and air conditioning guy. There's my crew that are the landscape sections. There's a couple of carpenters. There's several utility workers that have hats that they switch back and forth according to what happens to go on. And there's stuff going all the time. And then there is a planning and construction arm, too, that has its own staff. So if anything goes on, there's not only the people that are doing the job, there's the people that administer the financial side of it, and then there's the people that administer the physical planning side of it. It's a lot of fingers in every pie that goes on.
It's like its own town.
It is. It's much like a spaceship, you know. In order to keep the spaceship operating, you have to have all the internal systems going. And that's really a lot of what the facilities services does, is make sure that those internal systems are keyed up. Since I came there 16 years ago, it's been changed from a, well, not quite a stagecoach era, but, you know, a 60s era to a much more 21st century era. There's building automation sensors everywhere, and there are sensors in the rooms to say if there's somebody in there or not. The lights go on and off according to room occupancy. The doors are opened and closed, locked and unlocked according to who's going to plan to be there. The ventilation comes and the heating comes according to who's going to occupy the spaces. There's no sense keeping a room at 70 degrees when there's nobody in there, when nobody's going to be there for 3, 5, 7 days, you know. So
this, of course, saves energy.
Oh, tremendous amounts of energy. And the university has really focused on reducing the energy footprint. And so through the last 5 years, focusing on changing from fuel oil to hydropower for all the heating, that's really made a big difference.
Okay. What are some of your biggest challenges out there, either in your department or others?
Well, even though things are modernized, still, some of the buildings are old. You know, so there's a constant maintenance program, as there is with any older structure. You know, you have to watch out for the physical structure, the electrical components, any heating and ventilation in it, all the outer envelope. And then, of course, you want to make sure that it's appealing, and that it's easily accessible, and that also that it responds to the changing needs of the population. One thing you don't think about, the campus there, the number of students on the campus and the number of full-time people living on the campus in no way reflects the number of people that are actually enrolled as students. More than half of the credits of that school are for people that are taking distance education, and they range all over the state. They from Bethel to Metlakatla, and they're online. Their instructors are online. They have online exams. They have discussion groups. You know, you can take an entire education from your home through a place like the university. They're very, very cutting edge in that sense.
Sounds like you enjoy working there.
I have a great time. I really do enjoy it. And from my own perspective, you know, it's a vast canvas upon which to work. The largest one I could possibly imagine having access to here. So there's been some real interesting projects lately. And one of the, and again, like you said, energy reduction, you know, LED lights have come a tremendous way in the last 15 years. When I started there, LED was a novelty. And the first things we did with LED were to do Christmas lights, and I made these huge panels with LED rope light that had cartoon-like pictures showing in the nighttime. And so there were these vast, colorful displays. But that was only the tip of it. That was the kind of the introduction, the nose of the camel, you know. And now almost all the interior lighting is LED, and almost all the exterior lighting is LED, and that's reduced the electric load there 50%, you know, because a huge amount of it was taken up with high-pressure sodium lighting and pathway lighting and all that. And now all that stuff is done with LED, and they even redesigned the look of it. So in the old style, when you'd look down a walkway, you're looking into a tunnel because the lighting was all focused downwards. And the newer, more pedestrian-friendly is to have a glow around the whole area. So, yes, the pathway is illuminated, but so are the surroundings. So you don't have any wonder about what's happening in the bushes around there or down there 50 feet ahead of you. It's all pretty well illuminated. You can see very clearly. And when they redo the buildings, you know, that's one of the first things they talk about is how to reduce the energy use and also how to make it more, you know, more really useful for the staff and instructors and the students. And the last go-round of building remodels has been up at the edge of the campus, and that's the Whitehead Sobolov Hendrickson buildings. And if you're familiar with the campus, they're the ones that are the closest to the old entry where you came next to the chapel by the lake. And if you want to come and look around, the transformation of those buildings is really impressive.
I was going to ask you, so one of your favorite places is right there in front of the Egan Library by the Raven in that courtyard, it sounds like. If you were going to invite one of our listeners to come out and take a look at Spaceship UAS, as you referred to
it. Spaceship UAS.
Where else would you suggest they walk?
There's a pathway that goes from the recreation center to the student housing complex. It's paved and lit and nice.
And that goes by the Forest Service building? Is that right?
This is the one that goes, but there's nothing else on it.
Okay.
It goes from the rec center to the housing. And it's wide enough for a pickup to drive on, so plenty of people go there and walk their dogs or stroll. Or there is a coterie of young people who use it for longboarding. You got to be aware of them. You know, they use that access road that goes down to the student recreation center on longboards too. You know, they're sailing out there. I personally, that's way too young for me. You know, I'm not going to do that one. And what's happening right now, you know, the DOT is widening the highway there. So a lot of changes, a lot of physical changes going on. I know people are slowly becoming accustomed to living in a construction zone. Nobody's very happy about it. They say it's all going to come to an end pretty quick. But it can't come to an end too quick for me.
All right. David, let's see, you've been there for 16 years. What would you like to see happen in 10 years from now or in the next 16?
Well, I guess what I'd really like to see would be a greater community use of the space. You know, there's a real wealth of opportunity there. The library is a tremendous resource. And you can either do it by physically going there or logging on from your computer at home and having access to that. And you go in through the web portal there, and you're in the school. You know, you're in the collections, and you're in the – once you get in there, the library is connected to the entire world. You know, so that's one thing I'd like to see, is to be able to do that more. Another thing I'd like to see would be more active use by the local youth, high school and middle school kids. There are a few days a year when they come as a group and are being introduced, but it's really it's a marvelous resource and has all those teaching labs in it and has the potential for a lot of independent research to be done. When the science fair was still really active here, the students from Mount Edgecombe came, and you could see that they had head and shoulders above everybody else in Southeast. They had modern, scientific, technical education when they were in high school that put them on a par with sophomores and juniors in the university scheme, you know, and there's the teaching resource and the laboratory resource, and there's the access resource. That's what I'd like to see, is more and larger community use of that space.
Okay. David, I wish we had more time. Are there a few more things that you'd like to share before we wrap up today?
I think that the change in the campus look over the last half a dozen years, changing it from on both sides of a road to a closed-off pedestrian mall and making it a more of a university campus look, has really been a big step forward. So for those of you who aren't comfortable with long walks. There's plenty of parking lots around there. But do come and visit the campus, walk around, look at it. And as, you know, this time of year, when school's all starting again, everything is really at a high level of excitement. It's very refreshing. And it's in bloom now, too.
Find them online, find them on Facebook, or go out and walk around Spaceship UAS.
There you go.
David Lundrum, he's the landscape superintendent here with our UAS weekly update. David, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for inviting us.
Anytime. Great to have you here.
I want to walk into the boss's office and say that wrestling is not a legitimate sport, and I'm losing because he's writing scripts that tell me to lose, I don't. Because it's actually a good job, a dream job, and I'm happy to lose. And I don't mind that my knees hurt, my everything's hurt, because I'm one of the wrestlers, and I'm in love with who I am.
The elaborate entrance of Chad Deity at Perseverance Theater runs September 14th to October 7th. Tickets at ptalaska.org, The Jack, and 463-TIXS.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, September 7th. It's about 25 minutes after the hour. And speaking of the elaborate entrance of Chad Deity, here in the studio now is director Shona Osterhout and Chad himself, Vimal Cephas. Welcome to the show, both of you. It's great to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
How do you think, Shona, Perseverance came to choosing this play?
Well, we have this awesome actor in town named Enrique Bravo, and he is the actor in residence at Perseverance Theater. He has been for a number of years now. I think maybe this might be the fifth season, if my math is correct. And we, you know, we get together and we read plays and we're like, oh, this play is good. This will be, they're like season planning meetings. And we're like, oh, this play is great. And, you know, we all look at art and we're like, here, what do you think about this one? And we're pushing plays. And Enrique brought this play to us. It's by a playwright named Christopher Diaz. And it's just a brilliant play. And we were all like, yeah, okay. You know, it was kind of one of those things that it took a little while to get, you know, fit in the right place in a particular season. But it's just such a good play that we had an actor who is a very important actor to our community that could play a really good role. So that's kind of how it happened.
All right. So he plays Mace. Vimal, you played Chad.
Yeah.
The namesake of the play. Describe for our listeners, if you will, sort of the difference between you and, or I should say, Chad and Mace.
Chad is the face of the league. He's the Rock, your Hulk Hogan, your Stone Cold Steve Austin, any one of those guys who you think of as the champ. He is the champ.
Can you give us like a line just so we feel him for a minute?
Chad Deity was hanging out with his boy, Derek Jeter, the other day. And Chad Deity's boy, Derek Jeter, turned to Chad Deity and said, hey, Chad Deity, you're the champion and the ladies' man and the media icon I've always wanted to be. And Chad Deity turned to his boy, Derek Jeter, and said, Chad Deity knows Derek Jeter. Chad Deity knows.
So he does the full, like, third person referring to himself.
Oh.
Like, he is the Chad Deity.
All the time.
And then some.
Yeah.
All right. And what might Mace, his counterpart, played by Enrique Bravo, say about that?
Mace might say, well, just in general, he says something like, well, I really want to say this, but I don't. That, like, that's kind of like if somebody says something to him, his response is, how I really want to respond is, and then he doesn't say anything. Because he also plays the narrator, like he takes us through this play and on this journey with all of our wrestlers. So.
And doesn't, he's the one who actually knows kind of how to wrestle, and he wants to be a real wrestler,
he's legit,
right?
He's legit, yeah.
But Chad's just sort of in it for the glamour, right, or something? Correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't know how familiar you are with wrestling, but you have those guys that have been in it for the long haul, and they very seldom say anything. It's like, why does this guy never get on the mic? He's never in any promos or anything like that. It's just because he's not that type of person. He's more a little bit more down to earth, doesn't want to jump out there and be in front of cameras all the time. He'd rather just wrestle and love his life, you know, really tell these stories through the wrestling.
So that's Mace, that's Enrique.
Yeah, and he's also the fall guy. Like, it's set up, because he's not a showman like Chad Deity, he's set up that he's going to make the others look good by actually knowing how to wrestle. Yeah.
What have been some challenges for you or some successes? What surprised you most about producing this play, Shona?
Oh, wow. Well, so some of the major successes, this play is funny. This play is so, so funny. Like, there's times in the rehearsal room where one of these guys will do something. Vimal, you know, definitely a lot of times, will just throw something out there. And it's just, the rehearsal process has been really fun. It's funny. The show is so funny. And it's quick. You know, like, I have a short attention span. That's just how I roll. And so what I love about this play is you go in, you're there, you go through this, like, really funny, but it's heartfelt. It has a lot of meaning. It's smart in that political great way that I was telling Jeff, like NPR is smart and funny at the same time, you know, that kind of stuff. So that has been awesome. There's always surprises. I'm working with such talented actors that they're always bringing something new to the table. And as the director, that's like game on. You know, you cannot ask for anything better than to have so many choices. I'm like, oh, well, there's just so many options for this particular moment. Yeah, that's a dream.
I was going to ask both of you and see what you think. You know, and it seems like in the last 10 years, there have been a lot of art and wrestling coming together, either in movies or in plays. It's not something I think we might have predicted 15 or 20 years ago. What's the attraction, would you say?
Oh.
Or what's the story behind it? I mean, I get it. And, you know, I saw an interview with Christopher Diaz, and he's really smart. And it, like you said, it's interesting to listen to.
Ooh, that's well, it's interesting to look at people's storylines told through, like, fighting, you know, like this ridiculous fighting, and, you know, and men wearing spandex and, you know, jumping all over the place and yelling for no reason. But they all have a particular storyline attached to them. So I think that's, you know, probably the intrigue to it. I watched this show called Lucha Underground, which is one of the more relatively recent ones. I think it came out in like 2014, something like that. Very similar thing, but New Age. They bring the luchadors together with American wrestlers. So, I mean, it's really cool stuff.
I think the really interesting thing that I have a really hard time articulating this, so forgive me in advance, but the thing that I do love about this is that wrestling is, and I'm going to air quote this, and I'm not trying to spoil anything. It's fake, right? It's make-believe. So it's theater. So then you have a play, a piece of theater, on top of a piece of theater. So then you have, like, these layers of what I like to call masks, right? So then you get to peel all of these layers back and see actually what the real story is. And that, to me, is what the gift is of the playwright that has given us. Like, what is Chad's story when you peel back the wrestling, you peel back all that stuff? And Mace's story is, you know, is the journey. It is the, you know, it's his story. And just watching his journey unfold is beautiful. And so that's why I think the wrestling is actually there to kind of mask whatever this real story is. And the other thing about this play that I want to throw out there, it is political. I mean, there is a line in there that says, I know wrestling is not about politics. One of our characters says that, VP, which is played by a really great actor named Jake. And it's absolutely not true in our case. Like, this play is definitely highly political. It's about race. It's about turning stereotypes upside down, things like that. So it's and it's done in a smart, funny, witty way.
Tell us about the scene in Perseverance. What's it look like in there right now?
It's a, you know, 65,000-seat stadium with a huge ring. It's a nice setup. Lots of lights, very interesting lighting.
I heard with this place sometimes there can be some interaction with the audience. Does that happen?
Yes. We expect people to come there and participate. As an audience member, you are invited to participate. We want it, right? This is a play where you want to get involved because it's just going to be more fun for you. It's going to land fun for you. So you're coming to a wrestling match, and a play happens.
Yeah, scream, yell.
Yeah, exactly.
Cheer on the champ, you know, boo for the bad guy.
This sounds like a lot of fun. How about the details, Shona? When does it start?
Yeah, sure. So, let's see. We open on September 15th. I do know that. That's a Friday, September 15th. And we have a preview on a Tuesday before that. So I think that's like the 12th-ish. It runs September 15th through October 7th, and the tickets are available at ptalaska.org and or by calling the theater and 463-TIXS. And, yeah, it's going to be a great show. I think people are going to be surprised because it's not a title that you look at and you're like, oh, it's not I mean, it's just not a title that people know. But it's going to be a title that Juno knows, that's for sure.
Got it. So it's not this weekend, it's next weekend, basically next Thursday.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We open on the 15th as a Friday, and then we have a couple previews, a preview on Thursday and a preview on Tuesday before the opening.
Vimal Cephas / Chad Deity, any parting thoughts for our listeners before you leave?
Hey, thanks for having us here today. I want to also say thank you to the good people at Perseverance Theater and to the good people of Juno for making me feel so welcome. Hope you come out and see the show. And the elaborate entrance of Chad Deity.
And what might Chad say to our NPR listeners
as
you left?
Hey, this is Chad, baby. Make sure you make it out to see me, Chad Deity, at Perseverance Theater. September 15th. Don't miss it, baby.
If you've ever seen a one-trick pony, then you've seen me. Have you ever seen a one-legged dog making his way down the street? If you've ever seen a one-legged dog, then you've seen me. Then you've seen me. I come and stand at every door. And you've seen me. I always leave with less than I had before. And you've seen me. But I can make you smile when the blood it hits the floor. Tell me, friend, can you ask for anything more? Tell me, can you ask for anything more? Have you ever seen a scarecrow filled with nothing but dust and weeds? If you ever seen that scarecrow, then you've seen me. Have you ever seen a one-eyed man punching at nothing but the breeze? If you ever seen a one-eyed man, then you've seen me. Then you've seen me. I come and stand at every door. Then you've seen me. I always leave with less than I had before. And you've seen me, but I can make you smile when the blood it hits the floor. Tell me, friend, can you ask for anything more? Tell me, can you ask for anything more? These things that have comforted me, I drive away. This place that is my home, I cannot stay. My only faith's in the broken bones and bruises I display. Have you ever seen a one-legged man trying to dance his way free? If you ever seen a one-legged man, then you seen me.
And now checking in with KTOO.org and a story from our homepage. Southeast Alaska tribes welcomed home a long-lost ancestor last month when a Seattle couple donated back a 100-plus-year-old sacred Chilkat robe. Our very own Trip Krause learned how the robe made its way home and why it's significant.
Oh. drumming, dancing, and telling stories over an afternoon, representatives from three Southeast Alaska tribes celebrate the return of their Chilkat blanket. Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian members held a homecoming ceremony in the Shuka-Hit clan house in Juneau. But this story of the robe doesn't begin here. For more than 20 years, the sacred object hung on the wall in the Seattle home of Bruce and Gretchen Jacobson. Gretchen says her husband bought the blanket from a store in Seattle's Pioneer Square.
And Bruce saw the blanket robe, and he fell in love with it and brought it home.
Although Bruce Jacobson said the couple had the robe authenticated, not much is known about its history before he bought it. One of their daughters, Sarah, was reading an art history textbook and found a picture of a Chilkat robe. Recognizing the similarities between the picture and the robe that hung on her family's wall, she began researching. When Sarah learned of its sacred ceremonial significance, she insisted the family was trespassing on traditional Native culture.
She had a very pointed conversation with us where she said, you know, it's been sort of traditional for dominant cultures to take culture and art from other cultures and, you know, further damage their identity, and you're part of that process.
The couple reached out to the University of Washington's Brook Museum. Later, they contacted Rosita Worrell at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, where they eventually donated the robe. The couple came to Juneau as guests of the homecoming ceremony. Commenting on the story of the blanket, several speakers say that the family is integrated into the story of the robe forever. That's something that stuck with Gretchen Jacobson.
I think one person had said that, looked at the robe and said, the weave is just representative of how everyone is connected and everyone's related and we're all part of the whole picture, and it was a beautiful thing. And also, the other impression that came back, you know, there's a lot of bad stuff happening right now in our country, and you know, when you sit there, you see the heart and the resilience and just the beauty of it all. It was a bright moment for me.
She said she may never look at Native artwork the same.
Well, it was very emotional. It was very humbling, very emotional to realize that, you know, you go, it made me think of all the different art forms you see in museums, and you think, wow. Those are people's ancestors and spirits within these pieces. And it was just really moving hearing all the different clans speaking and telling their stories.
Yelnawu, Joe Zuboff, calls for the spirits of the Chilkat robe to come home.
Achish has tachlawaydi. Matikwahas takewe di zu akanyan kagwantan kakhas wushkitan. My fathers are the killer whales. My grandfather is a bear. My in-law also, my akani, is a bear. My wife and my children are kagwantan, eagle's nest house. My Tlingit name is Yeithnawu. Tonight I tried to put in some back the spirit that everything we believe, everything has a spirit. And to be a part of this history, tonight was we made history. There's a lot of history as we go back through centuries of whether it's peacemaking or war. We all have this history. And today is a big part of our history now. So part of the history on that blanket that returned is a happy history that comes back. So
Zuboff represents Raven House in Angoon. He's also a caretaker for the Ra'u'u, or sacred clan objects. Many Southeast Alaska Natives believe that their sacred objects are imbued with the spirits of their ancestors associated with the items. Tlingit elder and artist Ken Kotanik, Paul Marks, thinks those ancestors had a role influencing Sarah Jacobson.
My name is Ken Kodinik and comes from the Raven House, and it is from the Raven Sakai House. What took place today is as if our ancestors returned home to us, And the way it appears and sounds like to me is that the young lady who talked to her mom and dad, she heard the voice of our ancestors and that the blanket wanted to come back home.
His son, Paul Marks, also spoke at the ceremony. He speaks first in Tlingit and then in English about the Nahain, or Chilkat robe, and its importance.
This is the way our at'u'u is. They are masterless items. We are caretakers. We speak, our words just move aimlessly about without our at'u'u. Achaya tlachkunach yage ataya. This is why hajit awa achya nakein. That is why it is such a big thing that you have done for us, given us back this nakein. Achaya gunachisha gunachishye daituka sikat uhanj. That is why we are so thankful and we say thank you. No amount of words can tell you how good we feel.
Chilkat weavers hope to study the robe to learn how it was made. In Juneau, I'm Trip J. Krause.
comes from Southeast Radiation Oncology Center, featuring the third annual Patient Appreciation Luncheon on Thursday, September 14th from 11:30 until 1:30 at 1701 Salmon Creek Lane. Reservations at 586-5762 or southeastradiation.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, September 7th, about 10 minutes till the top of the hour. And now, the one, the only, the executive director from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, Nancy DeCherney for Arts Up! I need some reverb.
Yeah, no reverb.
What is going on this weekend,
well, you know,
Nancy?
It's a little bit quieter than some because there's a whole bunch of people running up the Skagway.
I know, the Kluani, right?
It's the Klondike.
Or Klondike, excuse me. Yeah.
Some K word with running. Like that. But anyway, we do have a few things for people who don't do that sort of thing to do. This evening, for example, you can do Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm.
That's at Filipino Hall, and it's a free health promotion for age over 60. So on Friday, you know, the Juno Dance Theater people have started doing adult exercise classes, and you might want to just go check them out. They've got Friday morning from 10 to 11 adult open ballet class, age 14 and up. But go to their website, which is junodance.org, and get the whole schedule. There's going to be a pop-up shop at the Nugget Mall, and that's all I know about it. I guess with pop-up shops, you don't get any information. You'll just have to go there from 10 to 8. From 4 to 5 out at the UAS Egan Wing, there is a lecture, a free public lecture, sponsored by the Math Club and Mathematics Program about a history of congressional apportionment, which is a math problem in many ways. There's yoga for recovery from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Yoga Path. This week, the theater to go to is Love Letters, a play by Theater at Latitude 58. And it doesn't tell me where they're doing this. So
I think they have a good website, and you can find them on Facebook.
And all that sort of stuff. And you can get the tickets at the Jack and Hearthside Books.
And that's Theater at Latitude 58, right?
Yep. There is Friday Night Live at the Alaska Fish and Chips Company. They have live music. And is it Annie B this?
I think it's Annie B.
I think it's Annie B. Yeah, this will be cool. And you can play cornhole, and it's fun. So that's from 7 to 9 over at the Fish and Chips on the flight deck. On Saturday morning, there's a storage auction at Juno Self Storage. So they've opened up some storage units that were apparently lapsed rent, and they're going to auction the stuff off.
Going to be a TV crew there?
I don't
know. Like when they open them?
I don't know. Maybe the pawn shop guy will be there, whatever those. Anyway, that's from 9 to 12 at the Juno Self Storage. So
on Saturday?
Yeah, if you need some stuff. We got a place to go. And from 10 to 11:30, it's the Juno Audubon Saturday Wild Mushroom Walk. So you meet at the trailhead at the end of River Road, and they're going to do a guided mushroom identification walk. There's been great mushrooms out there. There's shaggy manes all over. Somebody was telling me they just got a bunch of boletes. So go on out and find out about this, how to identify them and all that sort of stuff. Let's see. We've got a second Saturday market happening at the airport shopping mall also. That's from 10 until 3. They're doing watercolor plein air with Crystal Cudworth at the canvas from 10 to 2. It's from 11 to 2. It's National Drive Electric Week. And the subport right over that empty spotlight that you can see out your window, is going to be filled with electric cars, hot hamburgers and hot dogs and refreshments and fun and socializing and all test rides, all sorts of stuff. So go learn about electric cars from 11 to 2 downtown here in the old subport section. There's an Evergreen Cemetery walking tour. You meet at the cemetery, the city museum, and then walk from the museum down the old cemetery road to Evergreen Cemetery and learn about the history and the stories of various notable people who are buried there. It's going to be led by Marie Darlin. There's a little charge for it, but you can get more information from the city museum. You can see the love letters again on Saturday. They have a matinee and an evening show. Cornhole Saturdays at the Fish and Chips Company. On Sunday, there's, again, you can see the love letters. Alex Botello is teaching Beginning Wheel over at the Canvas from noon to 3. On Monday, Rotary Club is doing a 9/11 ceremony at the Riverside Rotary Park from 9:40 to 10:15. Take a few moments and pause and remember these things. AWARE is starting a fall advocacy training on Monday from 5 until 8. We have from 1 to 2 Mudrooms Playtime at Northern Light Church. Mudrooms monthly live storytelling event. The Project Playground is the charity of the month. So I wonder if the time is wrong on this. We'll have to check, but because usually Mudrooms is in the evening. But anyway, put Tuesday on your calendar and go to that if you can. Again, as I mentioned, there's dance fitness classes out at the Juno Dance Theater. Historic walking tours, these are coming to the end. They do them all the summer long from the City Museum, so check that out. On Wednesday from 3:30 to 5 at the Jack is an opportunity. Willoughby District Stakeholder Meeting, the Juno Economic Development Council invites you to come hear from the people that live and work in the Willoughby District and the projects that we're working on and that are going to transform this important downtown area. There's going to be the District Heat people, the New Jack, the Marina District, the Docks and Harbors, House Alaska, KTOO, and the Downtown Business Association, and more. A lot of new things going on in this neighborhood, so come on down and weigh in on all of that. I think that's about it. There's Ultimate Frisbee on Wednesday from 8 to 10 on the JD High School turf. So okay. Cool. Yeah.
People want more information. Where should they go, Nancy?
JAHC.org or KTOO.org. We share our calendars.
And click on the community calendar.
Absolutely.
All right, Nancy DeCherney.
Have a good weekend.
We'll see you a week from today.
All righty then.
Yeah.
Take it easy.
Me too. Thank you for tuning into a Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow, Andy will be your host, and we'll talk with Amy Rosenblum about the Above and Beyond Alaska kayak sale. We'll learn about a unique fundraiser at the Rookery for victims of Harvey, and it's called Fly Fishing the Euphrates. We'll get the details about Friday's burlesque show and all the other stuff like Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more. It's currently 55 degrees here in the capital city. The forecast for tonight calls for scattered showers before 11, then rain after 11 p.m. Tomorrow's forecast calls for rain.